You are listening to Secret Handshake, the podcast covering the movies that help you identify your friends and maybe make a few more along the way. Coming up, Spy number 84, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and the shoot 'em up neo-noir stylings of Shane Black. Featuring nom vets, heroin, cocaine, dead hookers, dead porn stars, scary henchmen, amnesiac spies, boozy private eyes, disgraced football stars, helicopter battles, machine gun battles, copious amounts of torture, and Gay Perry. Martin.
Yes.
Merry Christmas. Sorry I fucked you over. Welcome back to another edition of Secret Handshake. I'm your host, Jacob Knight, and joining us as always is Martin Carlson. Martin, you ready for some Shane Black?
Always.
And we're bringing back somebody, a blast from the past, Cody Bruchard. How are you, Cody?
What's up, guys? Doing good. Doing great. Love to see you both.
We've been holding off on this episode because I've promised Cody for what feels like half our friendship now that when we did record it, he's definitely on the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang podcast. But Cody, explain why you love this movie so much.
I think I first watched it when I was somewhere like in my early 20s, and I had like an apartment by myself, and it was just one of those movies that on a lonely night you could throw on, and it was like a comfort blanket. And it's also turned into like my favorite like Christmas watch movie every time, because it's very much like a Christmas-based film. Well, of the season anyhow. So yeah, just loved it for those reasons. And then the writing, the Downey, the Val. How can you not?
I mean, Martin, when did you come to it?
It was when it first came out. So it was, I had a friend, I think it played at Cannes. But I had a friend who'd already seen it early.
I don't think so.
But
because
it was,
this was a weird release. It's a Warner Brothers movie, too.
I may be conflating too, but I had a buddy who like interned at Cannes in college, and then he saw History of Violence, which was the same summer that this came out in the fall, but I think he had already seen this early for some reason. Was like, Martin, you're gonna love it. And I already liked Shane Black a lot, but he was not like part of my pantheon. Like, I knew he'd written a lot of stuff that I liked, but it wasn't like I was counting on the minutes. And I remember just fucking loving it. And it's one of my brother's favorite movies as well, so we always like quote it to each other. And we're a kind of a Val Kilmer family, so having him back in a really amazing role that had been a while for him was great.
See, I was counting down the days because Shane Black is like a big formative kind of voice in my cinematic development. Is that like I watched Lethal Weapon a million times on VHS. And I don't know if it was like reading old Premiere magazines or like Entertainment Weeklies or something, is that I knew who Shane Black was like really early on as like the first like rock star screenwriter, where he was selling, you know, $1 million scripts. He had a distinguished voice. He was working with these action filmmakers like, you know, Richard Donner and Rennie Harlan and Tony Scott. And he was pumping these things out, and they had a distinctive voice. You know, in a weird way, he's almost like proto Tarantino, but like he has a longer kind of lead time to where Tarantino only has True Romance before he starts directing his own movies. You know, Shane Black has almost 2 decades worth of like screenwriting work with some of the biggest filmmakers in the business before he actually makes his directorial debut with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah, and he also had, like you're saying too, like a Tarantino was kind of a script doctor. Like he worked
right on,
he's in Predator and the original Predator, but also did some doctoring on that script as well for some of the comedy. I do believe a lot of his jokes, his like sex jokes, are his stuff.
Are just his stuff. Well, I mean, when you listen to them, they sound like stuff that Shane Black characters would say.
Exactly.
You know, and then he goes on to also author, you know, like Last Boy Scout was a huge movie in my house. I remember my dad bringing that movie home on VHS. Lethal Weapon 2 was a big one for us. And then also Long Kiss Goodnight, which I just revisited for the first time in a long time on that new Arrow 4K. And man, I'll tell you what, that's one of the ones that stacks up really high for me. And it feels like one of the most Shane Black movies where it's kind of been relegated to almost like cult status to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Like it certainly isn't Lethal Weapon.
No, Amber, I saw it in the theater with my friend Ben in middle school. His much older sister and her boyfriend took us, and we had like, I remember just being like 13 and being like, this is the best movie I've ever seen. But it's also, and I didn't think about it at that time, but coming off the failure of Cutthroat Island and Renny Harlin and Gina Davis had kind of their tails between their legs from one of the biggest flops in cinematic history, and come back and make a really solid like 90s actioner with all the elements of a Shane Black story. You have like the smarmy, shitty henchmen. You have
oh my god, Craig Bierko.
He's one of the ultimate.
His good night is awesome.
One of the ultimate, like Shane Black. Like, it's always the second henchman below the main bad in some way. He actually ends up kind of being the main bad guy.
Well, and that was one of the things that growing up I was so attracted to, is that it was like when you watched, it was auteur theory, but for a screenwriter, is that when you watched a Shane Black movie, like something that was written by him, you could pick up on all the little kind of signposts and kind of signatures that he would put on it, to where, like, you know, Mr. Joshua, Gary Busey, is like the first big bad right. henchman that he ever has. And it has like that moment where Mel Gibson, you know, Riggs calls him out at the end and is like, hey, what do you think, pal? You want a shot at the title? Like, that still gives me chills. Like, Lethal Weapon is such a formative movie for me. But then you would see the pieces of Lethal Weapon go into like even Lethal Weapon 2, although there's obviously the whole, like, he doesn't work on the rest of the series because they kind of took that away from him. It's one of his most, like, famous screenplays. It was actually called Play Dirty, which his new Mark Wahlberg movie would take that title and use now. But it was, like, it was way darker. It was way more violent. Riggs dies at the end of his Lethal Weapon 2 script, and they basically were like, this is too dark, and they brought, you know, they reworked it, and, like, Stuart Baird, I know, is, like, one of the big kind of heroes on that movie. It's one of the
As the editor?
Yeah, as the editor, but, like, he would save a lot of that in, like, post-production to where, like, that, because if you watch Lethal Weapon and Lethal Weapon 2 in close your proximity to one another, the tone of Lethal Weapon 2 is so vastly different than 1. It's way lighter. It's way funnier. It kind of sets the template for the rest of the series. It opens with that big set piece, which is the car chase that ends with like the car crash and the gold coming out of the trunk and everything. And like, that would be kind of the template for the series going forward. So like, you watch it now and you could still pick up on the Shane Black isms of it, but like, they're a little toned down. But then you watch fucking Last Boy Scout. And Last Boy Scout, again, another movie that was totally tampered with, but like, still his like voice shines through so hard because Mr. Milo is like one of the great Shane Black henchmen. He's fucking gnarly.
Well, it's weird because he's clear, and that actor is queer, you know, and they really
Taylor DeGrand.
They really lean. I love his part in Fast Times at Ridgemont High,
yeah.
Pizza Guy. But he, and also I think a really great couple episodes of Seinfeld as well.
Yes.
But he's so creepy. I love like the smarminess of his henchmen. James Badge Dale in Iron Man 3, another of Shane Black, he has that level of this like shithead that you love to hate. And beyond that too, there's just so many elements that he reuses. I mean, like, especially his like more neo-noir ones, that I feel like he's always dancing between neo-noir and full action. And I feel like Long Kiss Goodnight is a full action movie.
There are two modes that he operates in.
Yeah.
And it's like, and when he directs, is one of the things we can get to, is like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Nice Guys are kind of more in the straight up noir tradition of the stuff that he writes.
Yeah.
Play Dirty starts that way. I don't know if you got a chance to watch the new one.
I made it an hour in.
See, I'd like
it. Yeah,
I think it's pretty
good.
I just
think Mark Wahlberg is so shitty.
He sucks. He's a huge block of wood in it.
Yeah.
Know?
And you're watching like, you're watching the movie being like, what if Robert Downey Jr. played this part, or another like, or even a Russell Crowe, like an older, like playing an older, because he's supposed to play Parker from the Stark novels.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that when you think about that concept in the abstract, it's like Shane Black doing his take on the Parker novels into like a big action movie for Amazon. You're like, where do I fucking buy tickets? You're like, I'll watch that tomorrow. And then like 20 minutes in, you're instantly like, Mark Wahlberg was miscast. Like, we could have gotten anybody else. And you kind of wonder why – there had to be a contractual thing or whatever to have Mark Wahlberg to make the movie, you know, because he just doesn't feel like a first choice. Because
he could have slotted Gosling in.
Yeah, somebody like that. Anybody who's has a little more idiosyncrasy, because like taking it to like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, it's one of the things that really defines a lot of his best movies, is that he takes these actors who aren't necessarily known for this kind of tough guy persona. Like pairing Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer at the time was kind of unthought or unheard of.
Both were done.
Because they were both washed out. I mean, Robert Downey Jr.
It was
credits.
His last shot at a comeback.
Exactly.
That's what got him the Iron Man part too, isn't it?
And that's what I was just about to say, is that he credits Shane Black and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang for like revitalizing his career and getting him the Iron Man gig.
Right, that
and that's why
he
makes
Iron Man 3.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, isn't that part of the thing too? And Downey also and his wife produced Play Dirty.
Right.
So it's like, and now that Downey's like still the most highest paid actor in Hollywood, now that he's back in the Marvel sphere. But
Downey also shows up in Nice Guys in a cameo. You know, he's the dead porn king that Ryan Gosling stumbles onto.
Yeah, and they're like, it's interesting.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the one in the shadow. He's wearing like a fake beard and everything, but that's Robert Downey Jr.
Okay.
Well, isn't it also that like Downey was uninsurable as well, and Mel Gibson was one of the ones who like basically paid the insurance? I think it was for Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood was like, we won't. Like, I think it was Joel Silver's like, we don't trust him, you know? And he had been a liability for
years.
He was clean at that point, but for a while it had been really, you know.
It was also like Val Kilmer, who was not quite blacklisted, but like he was on his way out to where
he was at the top of the difficult to work with list.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the best way to put it, is that like, because one of the things that I really like about Val Kilmer, or I guess one of the works I like from Val Kilmer before that, is stuff like Spartan, which are like really tiny David Mamet movies.
Well, even like Salt and Sea was that era as well, which I like, but they were trying to like a little noir.
And it's also like kind of lower budget, smaller movies that he would appear in, because it felt like the only thing he could really get, he could only work with either these filmmakers who are notably difficult, like David Mamet,
right,
or young guys like at the time, because that's DJ Caruso who makes Salt and Sea.
Correct. Yeah,
and I had like a soft space for that in my heart.
What, Salt
back.
And Sea?
Yeah,
I really like that movie.
My brother and I used to watch it all the fucking time. Yeah. It's like really good. Like, it's a good, almost like Joe Lansdale type story where
nasty.
It just starts out in one story and it becomes a completely different one.
Also, great over the top Vincent D'Onofrio in Salt and Sea with that pig nose.
Yeah, no, the fake no nose.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
he wears the pig nose.
Yeah,
you know, it is that it's like because he did so much gack, as they put it, that he rotted his nose off.
And they had the whole thing where
he just started boofing after that.
You would think so. It's the only method really left.
Was that scene where in that movie where they reenact the JFK assassination with squirrels and remote controlled cars? That movie is fucking deranged.
Yeah. Is it Peter Sarsgaard who's like the buddy with the mullet?
He's amazing. He's like, you don't like me.
Yeah.
You know, but this is like, what, 3 years after that? Because that was 2002.
Exactly.
I think. Yeah.
Really got to rewatch that one.
It's really, really good. But I mean, so here's my hot take. And we'll hash this one out. And I don't, at the risk of turning this more into a deal breaker than an actual secret handshake episode, I think Kiss Kiss Bang Bang might be one of his worst movies. Like, it's lower to the bottom of like Shane Black's output for me, because I think it's really good, but I don't think it works its magic on me the same way. It certainly doesn't work the same way that like Lethal Weapon does. I don't have the same affection for it that I do for like Last Boy Scout. I certainly don't like it the same way that I like Nice Guys, which I think is like maybe the best comedy of the last 20 years. Like, it doesn't stack up for me. No, it's obviously better than Play Dirty, and it's certainly better than the fucking Predator. But like, which I actually have a soft spot for his Predator, but like, it's in the bottom tier of his really good stuff.
Yeah, I rewatched them all, so I hadn't seen this in a long time. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and I've always liked it a lot. I had a great time rewatching it. It was really nice to go back into that, and also for me, it's kind of like a time capsule of before Robert Downey was overexposed.
Yeah.
I think you know, you get to like the later Avengers films and it's like he's still great, but it's like they're putting so much on him and his charm and letting him riff, that it's like, I remember seeing Kiss Kiss Bang Bang for the first time and being like,
It felt revolutionary.
His ability to do that dialogue, he and Val both, and his ability, to, like, for me, the scene that, like, really clicked that movie, where I was like, him, he goes to the party right before he runs into Michelle Monaghan, and Flicka comes by, and she goes, what do you do? And he's like,
I invented dice.
And she's like, okay. He's like, so that's it? And, like, that was the moment where the movie just, like, clicked into gear. And even when you're watching, I said, this is the movie, is that kind of, like, asshole, like, likable, but also just, like, he's us in L.A. being like, what the fuck is this world? But at the same time, I do think it is the first director of a screenwriter. First directing job of a screenwriter. But, yeah. And you could feel it.
Well, and here, the one thing I will give this movie, and particularly Robert Downey Jr., is that the narration for Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, you know, for years, the big selling point for Shane Black's scripts, if you read, like, the coverage and stuff, or listen to, like, agents or whatever talk about reading his stuff, is that they were like, it's very conversational. The thing that people really liked about it is that it sounded, when you read it, like a guy just sitting at a bar stool telling you a story, but in, like, script form. And Robert Downey Jr.'s narration captures that feeling, like, with all the starts and stops, the oh fuck, I forgot, like, hold on, back up, let
right.
me go get back.
That's
to
like
me.
My dad, like, oh, it's a blue horse, forgot to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. And it's
that's
like
me as the magician, I should have told you that earlier. Yeah.
And it does the thing that, because before wall, that maybe. Even with, like, he would do it in the prose and stuff, is because, like, one of the famous lines, you know, from the Lethal Weapon script is that, like, that time when Riggs and Murtaugh are pulling up to that big mansion and they see the people packing up cocaine, like, he describes the houses, this is a terrific house, this would be a great house to have sex in, like, after I sell this script. Like, that's the type of thing that he would put into the into the screenplays themselves.
Isn't the first house from the opening scene of the party, isn't that Shane Black's house?
Oh, I don't know.
I think that it is.
Okay.
Well, and but it's that's like reading Tarantino scripts too. Is like he breaks the fourth wall, like, in the script, like,
exactly.
as the writer.
And the other thing that Shane Black does, though, too, and this is one of the things that I think Play Dirty doesn't do that great, or, like, some of his movies that lose a little bit of that voice don't do as well, is the characters are constantly commenting on either the tropes that they're engaging in or where you're at in the story. And Shane Black does that with the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang narration, like you guys are just outlining too, of like, oh shit, I forgot a detail. Or like, hey, this is the part where, like, you should pay attention. You know, like the cook in Hunt for Red October. Yeah. Like, stuff like that makes its way. Like, usually his characters would say that before, but when you listen to the narration in this one, it's just Robert Downey Jr. doing that all the time.
Yeah, and I think it really works. But Cody, what do you think about his assessment that it's his worst?
I didn't say worst.
No, sorry, it is lower tier.
I mean, I can, I guess I can go with that, but I would also just hold. I just hold it by its own, on its own, independent, you know,
sure,
rankings, and for me, it's still very high. So,
well, I think it just doesn't. It doesn't deliver the same rush. Like, watching The Nice Guys for probably the 25th time, I still fall in love with that movie all over again.
Yeah.
Where I don't have the same feeling when I rewatch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It gives me a wave of, like, nostalgia a little bit, and it's still super fun. Like, I still like it a lot. Don't get me wrong. It's a 4-star movie, but it's like, and all of the back and forth, especially with Val Kilmer's, like, one-liners and how he calls fucking Robert Downey Jr. stupid all the time is terrific. But, like, when I watch Nice Guys has that core of sadness to it that even his, like, action movies that he was just writing for, like, Rennie Harlan and Tony Scott, like, Lethal Weapon, when I started with Lethal Weapon in my rewatching
Me
all
too.
These movies, and the thing that still to this day stands out about Lethal Weapon to me the most is how dark and sad it is, in that if you could almost play it straight, and I had the thought that if you play that script completely straight, it's just True Detective, where, like, Gibson is not that, and Riggs is not that far off from McConaughey's character in True Detective. And then Murtaugh is the straight man who's always just kind of reacting to his like ridiculousness the entire time. But instead of kind of having this like air of pretentiousness that all of Nick Pizzolatto's work has, like Shane Black plays it to where it's funny. And he like, cause he's riffing on all the Walter Hill stuff.
Yeah.
That Joel Silver, who's another kind of integral voice in bringing these movies to life, you know, he helped produce The Warriors and 48 Hours in particular. It's like 48 Hours is basically almost like the embryo that Lethal Weapon kind of like hatches out of.
Yeah.
You know,
anybody cop after that, really.
Yeah, exactly. But like particularly Shane Black with like, you know, with Riggs and Murtaugh, he's always mismatching these guys. He's always having them bounce off of one another. The other movie that this harkens back to is actually a Walter Hill script. I don't know if you've ever seen it from the, I want to say mid-70s. You ever see Hickey and Boggs?
I've actually never seen that one.
Robert Culp directed it, and it's Robert Culp and Bill Cosby, which obviously tough to defend that now, but it's like an I Spy reunion.
Yeah.
And that's what it was pitched as. But it's a pitch black neo-noir written by Walter Hill. It has the same kind of dark sadness to it and humor to it that Shane Black would make like one of his calling cards too. Because one of the, I mean, the greatest movie, the greatest moments in Lethal Weapon are all Mel Gibson monologuing. Like the moment where he talks about, there's only 8 to 10 guys in the world who could make that shot. I once killed a guy from 300 yards out in high wind. Like, that's all I was ever good at. Well, see you tomorrow. And it's like for me, the best Shane Black movies going forward harnessed that same energy. And the ones that fail to, and I think Kiss Kiss Bang Bang has a little bit of it, but kind of fails to fully harness it. They're the ones that fall, not necessarily by the wayside for me, but they don't stick with to my ribs as much.
Do you think it's partly because he's always dancing on the meta edge? Because I think with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, he probably goes the furthest.
Yeah, he breaks with the wall when he's like, there's old people in the way. Get out of the way.
Well, and also the inclusion of like the Johnny Gossamer novels in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Like that's him commenting again on like the dime store kind of publication, like inspiration.
Yeah, so he's and again having an outsider be put into this world, and he thinks it's like the movies or like the books, and you have the real private eye of Gay Perry being like, that's not how it works. Then sometimes it does, you know, and you're dancing between that. What I like about Lethal Weapon, and a quote you, Jacob, is it just does the thing regardless of the tone and the playing with tropes. You could forget that, and it's still a straightforward, amazing 80s action movie banger.
With some of the best action craft you'll ever see, like the amount
he pulls
of,
down the house.
Oh, my God.
That's part two.
That's Lethal Weapon 2.
Yeah.
Which is also great.
Yeah. Great set piece.
But Richard Donner, like, it's kind of under, his contribution is sort of undervalued as a filmmaker because he's never been, like, super flashy. He's just, like, one of your ultimate, like, technicians who's just going to, if you ask him to build you a house, he's going to build you the sturdiest house you've ever been in. And then, like, you're going to love just spending time in it the entire time. Like, he's so good in it from, like, the fucking Omen to Lethal Weapon. Like, all of his movies have just a really, really, like, almost old Hollywood Don Siegel-esque quality of like, I'm just going to give you exactly what you want from this thing.
I mean, even Goonies, where he's kind of like with a producer like Spielberg, like, I'm going to do Indiana Jones with kids. But he goes all the way with it. But it's interesting to watch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang because the opening of that movie, the opening of Nice Guys is identical to the opening of Lethal Weapon. It's moving into the city. It's almost like the Psycho shot where you start in, you know, you're in Arizona and you cut in Phoenix, you cut in until you get to like, you know, in a city full of a million stories, here's our story.
Right.
And both with the death of a woman, you know, and that's the thing is like, he borrows from himself so much. And that's why I think where a lot of the sadness comes in is so many of the stories are based around an exploited dead woman in some way or another. Even you think about Long Kiss Goodnight, she's the lead, you know?
Well, he's very into the idea of systems being unstoppable and crushing individuals. I mean, dating back to Lethal Weapon, I mean, Lethal Weapon cites Shadow Company
right.
and Air America, which were real operations inside of Vietnam, to where Vietnam veterans were coming back and still working inside the heroin trade and everything. And also, Shadow Company is borrowed from the original script that he would write with Fred Decker,
right?
Which is he and they were going to make with John Carpenter, is that it was about the undead Vietnam soldiers who come home and wage war on this like small suburban town. Like, he's always been fascinated with these ideas of like the trauma of going and serving and existing inside of like a system and what that does to you. Last Boy Scout does the same thing, only it trades basically like the American like war machine for the NFL.
Yeah,
it's literally about how do we save the NFL? Well, we have to legalize gambling. Well, how do we legalize gambling? Well, we put together this like neo-noir kind of plot that involves like assassinating a senator and everything and framing a private eye for it. But again, it's like the whole idea is like these two nobodies or like disgraced football star in Jimmy Dix's case coming and rising up against the system and trying to stop it. In that case, they win. I think that's why The Nice Guys is the ultimate Shane Black movie, is because in the end, the system wins. Like, Margot Qualley dies. Like, it's the whole, like, the ending of that movie is funny when, like, they're sitting at the bar and Russell Crowe's literally just drinking from the Captain Morgan bottle. And, like, it ends with, well, at least nobody got hurt. He goes, I think some people got hurt. They died. Like, and they just cheers. And they're literal, the best thing they can pull from that moment is, well, at least you're drinking again. And it cheers, but it's, like, in the end, there's no stopping Detroit. Detroit is going to roll on. They're going to crush whoever's their opposition, and they're going to put all these plots into motion in order to do so. These are the things that he's like fascinated by. Long Kiss Goodnight. Long Kiss Goodnight is literally about the byproduct of the same war machine, only she's an amnesiac spy who's brought back to life and has to wage war against her very like Jason Bourne like kind of overseers. Like, these are just the things that he keeps coming back to time and time again. It's the same as putting Christmas in his movies.
Well, that's the interesting thing too, though, is like, it's all about hypocrisy, because so much of it is about like the goalposts being moved. Because with Jimmy Dix, it's like, I got basically fired for gambling. Now they're bringing in gambling. And the same thing happens in Long Kiss Goodnight, where she thinks that Craig Bierko is going to be the enemy of her former bosses. Now they're all friends.
Yeah.
It's the idea of like, anything you base your allegiance on before, or anything you base your morality on, is going to change with the wind, right? So all you can do
is change based on the systems and the machine's interests.
Well, yeah, and how they are going to become the most successful, and usually with money, you know. And the idea behind Long Kiss Goodnight is, we're going to fake this Middle Eastern terrorist attack, you know, at night.
God, that, you want to talk about predictive, man.
Oh, shit, dude. Like, a lot of false flag stuff runs throughout.
Exactly.
These movies.
Well, and like, Cody just made the FanDuel joke, but like, his The Last Boy Scout predicts where football is at now, is that like, the NFL is only so successful because of two things: TV and gambling. Because now that you're allowed to basically sports bet on everything, like, that's what, you know, the higher ups and Shelley Marcone and Last Boy Scout are trying to get legalized through their plot, is that like, they're like, well, ratings are down, nobody cares about the sport anymore, how do we basically juice this up? We get people to gamble on it. Like, Shane Black was just seeing, fuck, he was playing fucking 4D chess with our culture.
There was a thing recently, right, in like the NBA, there was organized gambling going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, with Chauncey like, Billups yeah. and everything. There's that undercover where there's that huge sting where all those people got busted, like, going up the chain all the way to the mafia.
Right.
Well, and it's interesting too, like, one of the elements for me when I get, this is a fun watch, watching all these in like basically 4 days, was I love the sense of surprise and randomness in his movie, especially his action scenes. And I think Nice Guys is the one that does that to the limit, the best version, is him. You know, how many times does Ryan Gosling fall? You know,
Margot Qualley. How many times does Margot Qualley just stumble onto them?
Yeah, she jumps onto the roof of their car, and it's, if anyone else were doing it, I get annoyed with that type of storytelling. If I read a script or watch a movie, I'm like, I roll my eyes. But for some reason, he makes, yeah, but he makes it work because he's also admitting to what's happening of like, hey, there's all these, because that's a fourth wall break in my mind of even not saying it. You have Gosling fall down this hill and find the dead porn king.
Oh my
right,
God.
You need, and or the scene where he falls off the roof of the fucking hotel, and Keith David gets fucking splatted, and then the scene where
I can't die.
But like Russell Crowe, he goes, "Did you fall?"
Yeah.
Just like,
but that's what I was gonna say is that's why I think I agree with you. He sort of perfected his own formula in that is that instead of just having them constantly comment and be like, "Well, this is the part in the story where you know we would usually find the dead girl," he's having Russell Crowe react to the ridiculousness of his partner and being like, "Did you? You didn't do any detective work. You got drunk and you fell."
Yep. Yeah, he's so good at that. And also in the action scenes, too, of even the beginning of Play Dirty, there's a lot of, like, falling and accidental stuff in that shootout in the street. Like, he opens – there's one of the very Shane Black moments at the beginning of Play Dirty where he's trying to basically get information from this, a New Jersey hood. And he knocks out – you don't know this, but he knocks out the guy's driver, hides him in the trunk, and then he's driving him around. They get shot at. He hops out of the car and pops the trunk, and basically that guy starts shooting as well and starts shooting at him. It's this very like Shane Black moment of like, you see also he has the best moments of his heroes being fucking idiots, but also by the seat of their pants making the only decision that saved their life. Right? Like
putting bodies in trunks, that Shane Black.
Oh yeah, he loves.
Or showers and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and then letting Robert Downey Jr. pee on them.
That was another moment when I first saw it. I was like, oh my God.
Well, and there's where Gay Perry, Val Kilmer's character, and Russell Crowe's character are kind of spiritually connected, is he does the same thing with Val Kilmer it really relies on the performance that he gets from these guys. And one of the I guess things I used to joke about is how Shane Black is kind of like the patron saint of the overweight, washed up character actor.
Yeah.
Is because between Val Kilmer and Russell Crowe, like he gets these guys kind of after their prime, but gets two of their best performances of all time from them. And also he's having Gay Perry's reactions. They don't further the plot or explain the plot as much as Russell Crowe's do, but it's like some of his are some of the best where it's like, and I might have peed on the corpse. I'm sorry, come again? Why would you pee on the corpse? Yeah, and like just some of his the banter back and forth of like, you know, the moment where he plays Russian roulette with the dude shoots him in the head. And he's like, what chance did you do? He goes, oh, there's like an 8% chance of me killing. What? Who taught you math? Like, it's just, there's, all of his movies are insanely quotable, but to give credit where credit's due, Gay Perry might be the most quotable character that Shane Black ever came up with.
Oh, I think hands down. There's also, I was looking at my notes of just like how similar a lot of these, I mean, very similar these plots are, but one of my favorite moments in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang too. Again, him subverting a trope or like leaning into a trope, and it's the scene where he catches the guy basically gonna molest Harmony while she's sleeping.
Yeah.
at the party.
You better be your doctor.
Yeah, you better be your doctor. He's like, no, here's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna kick your ass. And then it cuts. He's just getting the shit kicked out of him by this guy. And then she goes home with the guy anyway. You know, it's like that is such a Shane Black moment that he's able to pull off. But I love just those moments of, from a screenwriter perspective, too, of like, oh, here's the scene where this happens, but he doesn't let you have it. Like,
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang also has one of his best in-scene running bits is when he finally does catch up with Harmony after that party in the bar, and they start looking around the bar, and they start naming things like Native American Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
Or what's the Billy Bob Thornton one?
I can never really clearly hear.
It's like Middle Eastern Billy Bob Thornton.
Something like that.
Indigenous Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, where they keep going back and forth on them. And
there was
like
a white Steven Seagal,
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
too.
Right at the end.
Like, that's one of the best like running jokes in the entire movie.
I also really, really like that moment where her friend's like, shoo, go away, because we've all been there.
Yeah.
And like that's a Shane Black scene, but also if you're a dude and you're having a nice conversation with a girl and the friend comes up, she doesn't want to talk to you. It's like, no, actually, we were having a nice conversation about Die Hard. No, you got to go. It's like, okay, well, I'll go fuck myself. It's like he...
Also one of the better bits of just what seems like ad-libbed Robert Downey Jr.'s mom, where he's like, Harmony, scary friend. You know, he really is allowed to riff, and there's a very, like... thin line between Harry and Tony Stark. Like Tony Stark, he adapts a lot of the same tics and quips. He just makes him, instead of a bumbling doofus, the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah, the moment like Avengers where he's like, that guy's playing Galaga, no one thought he'd notice, is a fucking...
But we did.
Like that's a Shane Black kind of line. And yeah. It's funny to see when they finally do Iron Man 3 and you have it all kind of come full circle, it's actually not a great movie. But the Shane Black stuff's really good.
Here's the thing, though, is people stick up for Iron Man 3 is like, especially back when Marvel was at its peak and the constant criticism of Marvel was like, these are all basically like producer directed, like, pieces of like corporate product.
Yes,
people would hold up Iron Man 3 and Guardians of the Galaxy as the other early one as being like, no, sometimes they let filmmakers come in and like do their thing. And it's like, yes and no, like this still is very much a Marvel movie. It just has that Shane Black, and like to me, Iron Man 3 having the little kind of Shane Black signatures and stuff is not too far off from like watching Crimson Tide and getting the Silver Surfer bits and being like, oh, there's where Tarantino contributed.
Well, and like for me, and I think it's like, I showed Iron Man 3 to my dad because my dad actually likes Shane Black a lot. He loves 80s and 90s action. So like, he took me to see everything in the theater. He showed me Lethal Weapon, like a lot of our dads did.
Amazing.
But I remember showing him that movie, and like, one of the best parts is not the action stuff. It's him and the little kid when he crash lands in that small Indiana town, which again is totally every fucking movie has some small Indiana town. And as a boy from Indiana, but the whole thing where he meets the young Harley kid who's an inventor, and it's just,
well, I mean, that's the other thing too, is the kids.
Oh yeah.
From like, you know,
especially daughters in particular.
Especially daughters. Yeah. I mean, dating all the way back to Murtaugh's super hot daughter and the condom commercial in Lethal Weapon 2.
It's really funny that sometimes my brain will mash together Loaded Weapon and Lethal Weapon, because there's the scene where she's playing footsie with him in Loaded Weapon and basically trying to bang him. And I'll be like, wait, is that scene where she plays? That is not in Lethal Weapon.
No.
Also, Loaded Weapon, a very, very fun like send up.
Emilio Estevez. Loaded Weapon sounds like the porn spinoff of Lethal Weapon.
Well, it's got, and you got fucking Samuel L. Jackson as the Murtaugh character. But you have that. The best. So my girlfriend Val had never seen Nice Guys, and she was like blown the fuck away. Like she was like on her phone and just put it down and was like, I've never seen this.
That's
and was
how you know.
And was just like locked in, and she was like laughing her ass off. But the scene was like, her favorite part was the daughter, because like Njuri Rice is amazing.
She's really good in it,
because she's that perfect level of precocious without it being like, sometimes like you roll your eyes like a kid like, as much as I love Man on Fire, like Dakota Fanning is so precocious, or even like the little kid in The Ring where you're like, he's doing his own tie. It's like, okay, we get it, he takes care of himself.
I mean, that's kind of my issue with the kid in Iron Man 3 is that he's almost too whimsical.
Well, and he's able to also spar with Downey, like he's as witty. We're
like Danielle Harris in Last Boy Scout, I actually think is on the other side of the spectrum, where I think she's too nasty. Like, she almost becomes unlikable.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, too, is, like, what really seems to be running through a lot of these, like, thematically, and this isn't nothing really profound, is these dad characters or their partners who think, am I a bad guy? And Nice Guys just hits it on the head by calling it the Nice Guys. Are we the Nice Guys or not?
Just tell me.
Yeah.
Don't sugarcoat it. Am I a bad person? Yeah.
Yeah. No, but you have, like, these people who want to be better. And I think that's what's really poignant about Nice Guys, especially Russell Crowe's character. There's a little bit of Bud White in there. There's not an accident that he's in this movie. I feel Bud White from LA Confidential, of this brawler who now has an opportunity to do something better. Like, this is like the case.
Also, like, he's the one who has the same Martin Riggs energy in that, right, where he's the guy who has a particular skill set and is kind of like has a darkness hanging over him the entire time and knows that he's a bad person but wants to change,
yeah,
or wants to move, and he does it for Ryan Gosling's daughter. But like, man, because there are, that's the other thing, there's moments in The Nice Guys that give me chills, is like when he kills the first henchman in the middle of the road
and she comes back,
and John Boy's gonna show up, he's gonna kill you, he's gonna kill your whole fucking family, you don't have that much time left. Well, buddy, none of us do. And he just chokes him out, and I'm like, god damn it, Russell Crowe, you're so fucking good in this.
You know, I think that's what really makes these movies work, is that he's so good at dancing on that line between comedy and like hard hitting action, is that he never loses the stakes.
No,
I feel like at his best, you're just like, I'm laughing my fucking ass off. It's just so witty. A lot of times it's very meta. It's having fun with the tropes, but I'm still like really care about these people.
Also,
and
the
I'm worried.
Casting is just perfect. Like Matt Bomer.
Oh my god,
as John Boy, as
with
the
little mole too. Like he's
the little mole, like he's on from the Waltons, but like he's in the grand tradition of Mr.
Yeah.
Mr. Joshua. You know, Gary Busey. I know, obviously, Shane Black didn't cast that movie, but like he clearly picked up on what Richard Donner saw in Gary Busey and was like, that we're going to do that for the rest of my filmography. Like, again, Mr. Milo with Taylor Negron is like absolutely incredible. But, and Craig Bierko, but like, man, Matt Bomer, he doesn't even get the same screen time as like,
as any of the other guys,
as Mr. Milo or Mr. Joshua or any of them. But when he shows up, you instantly are like, this guy's a monster, and he will literally kill children. He throws a little girl through a plate glass window.
That was a scene Val goes, whoa, because it's, yeah, like, again, a surprising scene. Well, and I think what's really cool too is that, which is unique for a Shane Black henchman, is we don't meet him till way after the midpoint. We hear about him for a long time.
Well, he's the second tier too, which they usually aren't.
Yeah, and but you wait, and then when he shows up, he's unstoppable. He's a fucking machine. Like that shootout when he's just like laying down machine gun fire, just taking guns out of his trunk,
absolutely
is
incredible.
Just like, and also he got, I think it's one of those things too, you think about how Coogler, by going through the Marvel machine, does Sinners and has upped his game in terms of knowing how to use special effects and crazy shit. Nice Guys is so polished compared,
right,
to like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You could tell that he did learn a lot from this huge $100 million, $200 million movie. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he's not just a director. He's a project manager to a certain,
yeah,
point.
He knows, like, how to lay it out now.
That is part of like doing those big productions, is knowing how to manage all of those working parts and get them to feel like it's effortless and seamless. But I also think, I mean, to take it back to the henchman thing, that's one of my main problems with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, is that it doesn't have the henchmen. Like the
there's
other
a couple,
ones,
but they're, they're,
you
not
have Dash Mihook and the black guy whose name I can't remember.
You have Keith David as well.
Well, no, Keith David's not in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
No.
Oh, I'm mixing up.
That's Nice Guys.
That's Nice,
dude.
Guys. Yeah, so he's – yeah,
you,
yeah.
You only have the two,
yeah,
who show up in it, and you never have a main antagonist in that. That's kind of my big problem with the movie.
Harlan Dexter.
I mean, not really.
Yeah.
Like, he shows up in, like, three scenes, but
I
he's
never – I
think the
never... main antagonist is L.A. Culture at the time.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that he focuses – but that's the problem with it, is that it's, like, where, yeah, you can put a name to, like, Vietnam, the NFL, you know – the CIA,
yeah,
and this, it's LA or Hollywood, and it's almost doing like a Chinatown type thing of like, you can't fight like this old kind of tradition.
That's,
but he never
like
puts a
it, though,
but he never puts a face to it the way he, right, puts a face to the other movies.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, there's just something I think about Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, rewatching it again, you feel, first time director, you also feel they didn't go full movie star with a lot of stuff, because again,
right,
you're having these people, which I think works for the film, but then you get to Nice Guys and that thing is just stacked. That cast is like stacked with everybody.
Well, and I think that's the problem when we're talking about Play Dirty too, is that all the supporting characters in Play Dirty, like Keegan-Michael Key and everything, they're terrific. The problem with that movie is that he does go full movie star with it and tries to make it a Mark Wahlberg movie, or maybe Mark Wahlberg tried to make,
right,
it a Mark Wahlberg movie behind the scenes. I don't really know. But it feels like a star vehicle, where Shane Black movies typically aren't that. Like, even Bruce Willis in Last Boy Scout, and that's the big thing, is that that was a huge troubled production, and Bruce was kind of at the height of his powers, and he and Joel Silver really gave Tony Scott a hard time, like, behind the scenes. But, like, even for as much as they try to make that a Bruce Willis movie, it's still a Shane Black movie, because Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans are the number one and number two. And honestly, this is the one thing I do want to debate. Is that the better Bruce Willis performance than Die Hard? I'm more of a Joe Hallenbeck guy than I am a John McClane guy.
Well, and you and I are talking off mic. My buddy Bo, who's a huge Shane Black fan and a big Bruce Willis fan, he made the point, I think he's kind of saying what you're saying, where it's almost like, this is the version of John McClane that I would prefer. Like, you get the Joe Hallenbeck vibe in part three, in particular, and Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Like, Joe Hallenbeck's pretty close to John McClane, and yeah, exactly. Die Hard with a Vengeance is like, Holly leaves him, he's an alcoholic, he's waking up hungover in the truck.
Yeah, but I think, it's fucking hard. Die Hard was my number one favorite movie.
Don't get me wrong.
No, I know. And I'm not going to.
There's no right answer.
I know. And, like, Die Hard was my favorite movie, and it still is in my, like, top 10 of, like, the greatest American action movie. I think he's a better, obviously, a better clean action star, and, like, a perfect thing of, like, that because he was this guy who was part of the hard body era, but he wasn't Stallone, he wasn't Schwarzenegger. We talk, he has more of like a normal, like,
he's
working
an everyman.
He's everyman.
That's what I mean. That's what that movie did, was completely turn the trope on its ear of what a superhero, quote unquote, in a movie could be.
Yeah, I mean, he can get injured.
Well, and him he's in like the bathroom crying and being on the telling him to talk to Holly, and like, but then you have Hallenbeck. I think you have what's really interesting. He's challenged to be a bigger piece of shit, because with Die Hard with John McClane, yeah, he's like not a great husband and like they're separated, but like he's immediately in hero mode.
Right.
Like in this one, you're like, Hallenbeck's like, also he's a cuck. Like, not only does he suck, he's been cheated upon. Like, the first time we see him really interact with another human being is to find out his best friend's fucking his wife.
Mm. You couldn't protect a warm cup of piss.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's another scene, but I don't know. What do you think about, like, the difference, Cody?
It's hard to say because I haven't seen Boy Scout in quite a while. But, I mean, so just my biased opinion is that it's Die Hard just because I'm more familiar with it. And I feel like it had more of a cultural impact. I mean,
Oh, for sure.
For sure, yeah. Like, if you're arguing that, then there is no argument whatsoever, especially once you get to Die Hard 2, which is almost like a fucking Canon Films version of an Irwin Allen movie, and McClane goes from like being a normal guy to almost like a superhero that. But like,
they balance it out in three pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. They bring him back down to like the streets and make him more human in that one.
Yeah.
I mean, it also, I think it helps that like McTiernan comes back and makes Die Hard with a Vengeance instead of Rennie Harlan. Cause that's the thing, is that like, Long Kiss Goodnight feels like a superhero origin story.
Yes.
Like, it's about...
Or like a pilot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it has very much... Like, I would watch the continuing adventures of Charlie Baltimore if you put
that
out tomorrow.
Identity.
Well, no, it's more...
I mean, Long Kiss Goodnight, she's amnesiac, you know...
It's
super the special agent that has
it is
skills.
Very Ludlum-esque, but my point is more like, if they made a Long Kiss Goodnight 2, I would totally watch more Charlie Baltimore. Also, Charlie Baltimore, incredible name. And a good enough name that a rapper stole it.
And also one of the best, one of the best things that Shane Black's able to do is these amazing buddy pairings, right?
Right.
And adding the cross-gender thing of having basically Samuel L. Jackson play against two different versions of the same character of housewife, Prissy, I'm sleeping in a separate room, to awakened Charlie Baltimore
murder machine
who now wants to fuck and to forget about her family. And you have, again, his character is very similar to that Gay Perry or that Russell Crowe being,
or
like
Joe Hollenbeck.
But he's like, what story am I in terms of that aspect of like, he is this regular private eye who is now in a spy epic shootout. And like he's catching guys with prostitutes. That's his normal job.
It's also cool to see Samuel L. Jackson play the Shane Black loser.
Yeah.
Like the guy who desperately wants to redeem himself. Like the running through line in Long Kiss Goodnight where he's just stopping himself and being like, just do this one good thing right. Like, and he just keeps saying it to himself. Like, I think Samuel L. Jackson, like his performance in that movie is pretty underrated because he's really, really good in it.
Well, the scene where one of the first scenes is him with his kid, and it's like really effective because he's giving his kid this like really cool play set, I think for Christmas, and yeah. And his, you know, the kid tells him like, yeah, you know, mom took the Schwinn back because she thought it was stolen for my birthday.
She started calling around all the stores to see if they were missing it,
and she's not going to let me keep this. And it's like here, but again, what Black is so good at writing is these like really down and out like. Again, drinking, smoking, sleeping wherever they have to, usually divorced with a kid, but you still like root for him, you know?
I mean, they are straight from like Raymond Chandler books and old like 40s noir movies.
Yeah, or Elmore Leonard kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. Elmore Leonard's probably the better comp because like they could easily front their own Elmore Leonard novels.
Yeah.
You guys want to get to questions?
Let's do it.
All right. We're back with questions about Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and the filmography of Shane Black. Martin, top three Shane Black movies, go.
Number three, I will do Long Kiss Goodnight. Love that one. It's also one of the just fun to pop in. Great rewatch. Then I'm going to go Lethal Weapon is number two. And then number one would be Nice Guys.
That's right. Talk that shit, baby. Cody.
Man, that's tough. Probably Nice Guys, Lethal Weapon, Kiss Kiss.
I'm going The Predator.
Really?
No.
Oh, shithead.
We didn't really talk about The Predator too much. Not a great movie.
No.
I still enjoy it. I have a soft spot for it.
I think the character interactions are pretty good, but
yeah, it has a lot of the Shane Black characters, and Sterling K. Brown is, like, the closest we get to, like, the great, like, Shane Black henchman.
Busey's kid playing Busey's kid.
Yeah, Boyd Holbrook is fun.
Also, Tom Jane's fun in it, too.
Tom Jane, Keegan-Michael Key,
yeah.
The guy from Moonlight. Like, yeah, you know.
Did we say Olivia Munn?
But yeah, Olivia Munn, like pretty stacked cast, you know.
And the action actually is good. Like he did, like he
Jacob Tremblay being like a superhero autistic kid is
yeah.
weird.
He's like part of the accountant too. Yeah, like he'd be going to school
the
X Men,
the X Men autistic school. Sure,
but I remember the.
I heard
that
Shane Black was the dean there.
I'm sure. All right, so what are your three?
I would go, I mean, Nice Guys, Lethal. No, I mean, Lethal Weapon is number one.
Okay.
It will forever be number one. Nice Guys, and then Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yeah.
Probably. Oh, man. Or
Last Boy Scout should be in my top three.
Last Boy Scout is like, it's probably the more meaningful of the two, but I think Long Kiss is the better movie.
Yeah.
All right. Remake. Redo.
I mean, for any of his stuff. I mean, definitely not for Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. There's just no way. I would.
Well, there was a Lethal Weapon TV series.
A bad one with Damon Wayans.
And Sean William Scott.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I forgot about that.
And it ran for a while. It was like 3 or 4 seasons.
No, I thought it wasn't Sean William Scott. It was that other guy.
I thought it was Sean William Scott. Am I wrong?
No, it was this other guy who
looked like Sean William Scott.
Yeah, but there was a lot of production problems. Like, I saw a lot of stuff of him being a huge fucking asshole.
Really?
And they weren't getting along. They had a lot of production stuff.
Because it wasn't another Wayans kid, too? Who cares? It sucked.
I was to your earlier point, even about Long Kiss Goodnight, is like
Clayne Crawford?
Yeah. Just give us a sequel to any of this shit. Like, I'd love a Nice Guys,
Sean
too.
Sean William Scott's in there.
But
yeah,
he
was in there.
But he's not Riggs.
Yeah, he plays Wesley Cole.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would say, honestly, another Long Kiss Goodnight, going back in time, like in the 90s or 2000s, a Nice Guy sequel would be great. Hell, even like, you know, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang with the, you know, they all end up being like there's a group made of now we're all working together, mm-hmm. and I would like to see that.
A little director family.
I would love to see. I know this is slightly cheating, but I would love to see some of the original scripts Shane Black had, like the original Play Dirty script, which was Lethal Weapon 2, you know, where like it was way darker, way more violent. Riggs dies in the end. I mean, the original Last Boy Scout script had a lot more violence in it. Like Mr. Milo directed snuff films in the original script.
Jesus.
Yeah. So like, I would like to see some of the elements he was never allowed to get away with, but if we're just doing like a straight remake or sequel or whatever, like obviously I would want Nice Guys 2. Like yeah. That's a no brainer.
And you could still do it like right now with everyone.
You know, to Cody's point, like Long Kiss Goodnight, like you kind of have it with the Bourne movies. Like that's sort of tough to ask for. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is great as like a one-off. Although I did have a thought while watching it today is that seeing Shane Black, and I think he was going to try to maybe attempt to do this if his Parker movie was bigger, but seeing him maybe make like a Johnny Gossamer series to where it's like a series of like maybe even like an anthology of like just different mysteries of the week, kind of like how Rian Johnson did with Poker Face. That might be kind of interesting.
Well, we were texting about it. Like he's so similar to like Ed Brubaker. Like right. Imagine if he got to make a run at like an Amazon series, like an 8-episode, whether it's anthology or a really cool longer.
Well, and like Brubaker and Jordan Harper and everybody are working on Criminal. Right
exactly.
Now.
That's what I was thinking. At Amazon.
Based off of inspired by.
Yeah, Bodies Are Where You Find Them.
Right. Right? So I'm assuming that's a series by the author. Like you could just keep picking up those books.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It's like do something like that would be like a lot of fun if he just made that style of right. series.
Yeah.
It's like, could you imagine if Shane Black made like John D. McDonald adaptations?
Yeah.
You know, like that would be absolutely insane.
No, he just is such a prolific writer too, like especially at that early era of the 80s and 90s, but like him on even autopilot is amazing. Just let him just go crazy and write a bunch of, you know, mysteries of the week.
What do you think?
I would love to see a sequel to Nice Guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's undeniable. The movie's just so fucking good.
And it did well. It wasn't like
it wasn't too great.
But it wasn't a flop. But
you could even have the daughter grow up some and then she's suddenly Veronica Mars.
Yeah. I mean, not a bad idea. Like if she's part of the Nice Guys, like detective agency at the end. So, double feature.
I would do Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Get Shorty.
Oh.
I mean, again, Elmore Leonard, very similar setup, but it's instead of a schlub, it is an actual mobster coming to town, and he's like the change agent, but also he's kind of commenting on how weird Hollywood is.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually goes both ways because he's trying to like get involved and write a movie, but they're like, well, that's only 30 minutes of a movie, the whole Shylock story.
Yeah.
And also Elmore Leonard, we were saying earlier, and Shane Black just are very similar, those types of narratives. Also, it's very meta. So it ends with like you actually see the movie that you've been watching. You have Harvey Keitel playing the Dennis Farina role. Fuck you, fuck bull, you know. And they're both delightful movies about mm-hmm. like LA culture.
I would do Last Boy Scout and 52 Pickup.
Nice.
The Elmore Leonard adaptation with Roy Scheider and Anne Margaret. Clarence Williams III is basically almost like the Shane Black henchman in that one.
Yeah.
If people have never seen 52 Pickup, holy shit. One of the great kind of John Frankenheimer movies, one of the great grimy Elmore Leonard adaptations. It's really, really good, really, really nasty, and like has the same vibe as like the neo-noir stuff that Shane Black would go on to make himself, but also like it doesn't have the sense of humor. It's just played straight pitch black.
Yeah.
What about you, Cody?
Doing double feature with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I'm going to kind of go on the ear here and do Sin City with it.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. I haven't watched that in forever.
I was literally about to say the same thing, and I loved that movie in theaters. Multiple detective tales in
there. You know, you got some buddy cop pairing up sometimes with like Marv and
it's a little self-referential and kind of like meta.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and Frank Miller is doing his is a more comic booky version of what Ed Brubaker does. Brubaker skews a little bit more like you're reading like a detective novel, but Sin City is that, like, Marv in particular is like this superhero. Yeah.
It's like hyper noir.
Yeah, hyper. Yeah, yeah. And especially the color, but like, yeah, I haven't seen. I hated the sequel.
It's terrible.
That was a bad.
What was that?
Movie.
A Dame to Kill For?
A Dame to Kill For. Yeah. That movie sucked.
I mean, Robert Rodriguez sucks.
He does. Yeah, he just gets lucky with the right project here and there. He's doing Battle Angel Alita too. Great.
I'll tell you though, I have been tempted, not to get too far off the beaten path here, but I in my Amazon my running Blu-ray shopping cart.
You want the Desperado 4K?
Well, I was gonna say the Mexico trilogy that Arrow put out. I've definitely toyed with, because like Desperado and El Mariachi still rule. Once Upon a Time in Mexico, not as much, but like,
dude, Desperado rules.
Yeah, Desperado is so fucking good, and Selma Hayek's so good in it.
Desperado is undeniable.
From Dusk Till Dawn, still rips.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So like,
it's a Tarantino script with Rodriguez directing with Tarantino in it. I mean, come on.
Have you seen the interview with George Clooney talking about how he got cast because Tarantino thought he looked like his brother?
I was watching ER, man. And I just looked and I was like, fuck.
And Robert's,
man,
like, we got to get that guy, man. He looks just like you, man.
And George Clooney does the ultimate Clooney face, though, where he goes, and I was thinking, what? He's so fucking charming.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
All of his J. Kelly press tour that he's been doing now is just a reminder of, like, also, J. Kelly, not a great movie.
Yeah.
But, like, so if, you know, you have that on your docket, maybe skip it.
Yeah, I just listened to a review about it today that didn't give it
all
the praise.
It's not one of Baumbach's better movies. But the press tour has been terrific because watching him and Sandler just yuck it up and have a lot of fun.
I hear it might be good for Sandler, though. He might get an Oscar nod for supporting.
It would be a farce if he did. Yeah. I'll put it that way.
It's also a stacked fucking year, so the chances are pretty.
I can't see it happening. Also, it's just in terms of like Sandler dramatic performances too. Like, it doesn't touch fucking Uncut Gems or like
Punch Drunk.
You know, it's, or even Funny People. I think he's undervalued in Funny People.
He's very good in that.
So last but not least, Face Melter. Yay, nay.
Nay.
Yeah, I would agree.
I'm going to say yes because it introduced me to Michelle Monaghan.
Well, as you did text me, though, that you're like, damn, Michelle Monaghan is uncomfortably hot in this movie.
Well,
the intro to her, she's got her legs crossed. The narration is like, yeah, check out those stems.
Well, what's interesting, I think, what I really like about that movie as well, though, is because she was in her mid-30s when they did this, and you watch like films, like she was in Born Identity as like a CIA tech.
Right.
Like, she'd been around, like, really knocking on doors, and a lot of the people in the movie are people that Hollywood kind of forgot or passed over. And her, obviously, kind of launched her career.
Yeah.
You know, and she's great. She's wonderful in that movie. Yeah.
She had her moment there.
Also, True Detective.
I was going to say, she came back as getting, you know, cheated on by Woody Harrelson. I mean,
she got him back with McConaughey, so.
Yeah, so, but God, what a legendary run that character had of being married to Michelle Monaghan and then cheating on her with Alexander Daradario. It's like, Jesus, dude.
Yeah.
Your dick must be, like, fucking made of platinum.
Well, you just said, but the big old dick.
Well, that dick swagger you got, you can't spot crazy pussy. Anyway, guys, this has been great. Cody, it's been great to have you back.
Yeah,
we
guys
finally got Kiss Kiss Bang Bang under our belt. What are we doing next?
I think
we were kicking a couple things.
Well, I
around.
Think we're going to talk a re-release of two movies that we just saw.
Yes, yes. And then I think we're going to do Best of 2025 after that.
Mm-hmm.
So stick around for more Secret Handshake.
Bye.
Bye.
Twice the night before Christmas. And all through the
house.
Hold
it now, wait, hold it. That's played out. Hit it.
Don't you give me all that jive about things you wrote before I was alive. Cause this ain't 1823, ain't even 1970. Now I'm the guy named Curtis Blow, and Christmas is one thing I know. So every year, just about this time, I celebrate it with a rhyme. Gonna shake it, gonna bake it, gonna make it good. Gonna rock, shock, knock it through your neighborhood. Gonna read, gonna sing it till it's understood. My rapping about to happen like a knee. You been slapping or I told you been tapping on a hunk of wood. Bought a red suited dude with a friendly attitude and a slave full of goodies for the people on the block. Got a long white beard, maybe looks kind of weird. And if you ever see him, he can give you quite a shock.
Now people, let me tell you about last year when the dude came flying over here. Well, the Hulk was out, snow's on the ground. Folks stayed in to party down. The beat was thumping on the box, and I was dancing in my socks. And the drummer played at a solid pace, and the taste of the bass was in my face. And the guitar player laid down the heavy layer of the funky chunky rhythm of the disco beat. And the guy with the 88 started to participate, and I could sure appreciate the sound so sweet. We were all in the mood, so we had a little food and a joke and a smoke and a little bit of wine. When I thought I heard a hoop on the top of the roof, could it be it wasn't me? I was feeling super fine, so I went to the attic where I thought I heard the static on the chance that the fans was somebody breaking in. Put the noise on the top with a reindeer crop, just a trick, same thing, and I let the sucker in. And I said, holy moly, you got a lot of wishes on your chinny chin chin. He allowed, he was proud of the hairy little crowd on the point of his door where the skin should have been. Gets cool for a fool, going out every year for a day on the sleigh when the cold is low. So the beer made me weird, but I'll never have a cheer, cause it's warm in the storm when it's in below. I said, yo, God, it's cold tonight, but can you stop for a drop before you go? He said, why not? If the music's hot and our chance to dance beneath the mistletoe. So he went downstairs and forgot his scares, and he rocked the spot and danced like a pro. And every young girl tried to rock his world, but he booked the yogi yogi till he had to go. And before he went, this fine old gent bought a gift with a sip through his big red bag. In the top or the bottom, he reached in and got him toys for the boys, for the girls' glad rag. And the grown-ups got some presents too. A new TV and a stereo. A new Seville, about as blue as the sky. The best that money couldn't buy. Cause money could never ever buy the feeling. The one that comes from not concealing. The way you feel about your friends. And this is how the story ends. The dude in red's back at the pole up north where everything is cold. But if he weren't right here tonight, he'd say,